time for your view from the C-suite here on Classic Business in partnership with Altron, bringing you much closer to the business leaders around the boardroom table. What makes them tick? What keeps them up at night? What worries them about South Africa and business and gets them out of bed every morning and really just drives them to excel in the pressure cooker of the boardroom? Well, my next guest has left that pressure cooker behind somewhat. He's got a remarkable story from very humble beginnings to straddling the corporate landscape in the country, in the property sector in particular, most recently in Poland as well. The former chairman of Redefine, the founder of the second largest listed REIT in South Africa, Mark Wehner. So a little bit more time on your hands, or do you have more time? Mark, good to have you on The View.
My days are pretty full, Michael. Thanks for having me. So, yeah, I'm busier than I thought I would be, which is quite good because it keeps me a bit out of mischief. But I certainly am not missing the corporate governance and, as you put it, the pressure cooker of a large listed company.
It really is stress on another level for anyone who hasn't ever endured it. Now, I recall that I'm reaching back into my memory banks here, shadowing my late former mentor David Gleason to a meeting with you back, I think it was around 2005. I was sort of still very green, fresh out of varsity. You were still the CEO of Redefine and sitting in a corner office in Rosebank, ashtray piled high with the used cigarettes butt and ready to hold forth with some other pearl of property wisdom. Now, you certainly can't do that anymore, smoke inside offices, but the world has really changed in the last 15-odd years since then. What do you make of the world that we live in today? It seems to be rather more sanitized. There's a lot of sort of thought police out there to get you on social media and the like. And you mentioned the corporate governance. The regulations are all over the place. Just give me your broad views on how corporate South Africa has changed over the last while.
So I think that we lose some of the personal interaction because of the internet, emails, social media.
Yeah.
And I think that the most important part of any business is the relationships that you have across the whole spectrum, whether it's your stakeholders, your staff, your suppliers. All of these people are very important. And, you know, I think this is part of the thing we lose. And perhaps going to get worse with this fourth industrial revolution. But at the end of the day, it comes back to me always to people and to relationships. And as I was saying, on corporate governance, I believe it's necessary. But I think as a developing country, South Africa, in many respects, have gone overboard. And we do a lot more than some of the developed countries. And the truth of the matter is, if somebody is going to be dishonest, they're going to find a way around it.
As we saw with Steinhoff, you know, a board packed with some of the
best
auditing and accounting minds we had to offer.
If somebody's determined to be a crook, they're going to do it, irrespective of corporate governance.
Our regulation's got to be contextually relevant. Now, you founded Redefine back in 99. It listed back in 2000 with a market cap back then of 463 million rand. So phenomenal growth, well over 100 times that you've grown that business. But your career in property began when you actually applied for a job managing a shopping mall in Kempton Park. And in your book, Making My Mark, you reveal that it was with very little relevant experience, but you got the job because you did your research and you showed up. And looking back on your career, what would you pick out as the defining moments for you?
Well, I think the first defining moment was taking a job, moving from a little grocery store into the property world as a shopping center manager, bearing in mind that it was the first shopping center in South Africa. So there were no rules, there were no guidelines as to what a shopping center manager was. And in fact, it's quite interesting. The challenge in those days was we couldn't get the retailers to believe that people would shop out of a mall. So we had to have shop fronts on the street frontage, and they had two entrances. Today, of course, there are different challenges, but there always have been challenges. So I think there have been a number of highlights in my career, highs and lows. So I think one of the most fascinating ones for me was the acquisition of Canal Walk, which was probably 10 or 11 years ago for 1.2 billion, which is now a 12 billion value. The entry into Poland, Australia have been fantastic learning experiences. Poland in particular is something that I regret I didn't discover 5 or 10 years ago, because there are so many parallels to South Africa with them coming out of communism. us coming out of apartheid and becoming democratic. And yet when you see the progress they've made, when you compare it to what's happened here, it can be quite depressing.
Depressing, but at the same time, one likes to hope that we, or live in hope that we can at least learn the lessons. And, you know,
well, I wish, you know, I've tried to get government or people allied to government to come on a tour, just to meet with some of the Polish people that we're able to introduce them to, from government officials down, and to see what they've done. They reduced that unemployment of 22% in 2004. It's now below 3%, and they have 2 million people from the Ukraine working in Poland because they haven't got enough labor.
A phenomenal story. I mean, I was there recently as part of an analyst tour to kick the bricks of the EPP assets and some of your logistics assets over there. And, you know, you mentioned the fact that here we have a communist-run country that in 1989 eschewed communism, turned its back on it, and in 30 short years has really become from developing to a developed market. And it did that thanks largely to policy certainty. For my mind, my trip certainly impressed upon me the importance of policy certainty, because if you had different, you've had, I think, 17 different administrations.
17 governments in 28 years, but other than tweaking with the tax and closing tax loopholes, the economic policy that they put in place in 1994 has remained intact.
Yeah.
So you know with certainty that's the economic policy, and it works, and you can see, and that's why only Australia and Poland have had 28 years of uninterrupted GDP growth.
One hopes that the penny will drop. As I said earlier, you said you wanted to organise a tour. Has anyone accepted the invitation?
No, they haven't. And, you know, I think there's more to learn from Poland than there is from Venezuela.
And that's where we tend to be sending our delegations, and to Cuba. Yeah. I mean, we say that in jest, but we do have a new administration, Mark, that seems more open to business. Would you say the Ramaphosa administration is doing the right things from that perspective?
They are, but it's slow. You know, and I think that the problem that the president has is the divisions within his own party, so I don't think he can move forward quickly enough. But we certainly are more business-friendly now than we were, let's say, 2 or 3 years ago.
That said, though, as a property company, you deal with local government all the time, and you were never one to mince your words about the slow at first and then very rapid decline of local government. What are you seeing in that space at the moment?
I would say that Johannesburg has improved dramatically. We're able, although we still have issues, but we are able to get hold of the mail ever and resolve it. Tshwane, not much change.
Well, that is depressing, to say the least. Now, looking at your deal-making ability, you were always renowned as an astute deal-maker, and it comes back to your earlier point about building relationships and how important those are. Property is definitely a personal game. It's a relationship game. You've got to kick the bricks, and if you're partnering in a Polish venture or an Australian venture, you need to be able to trust who's on the other side of that transaction. But looking at how we grow the next generation of leaders in the property space, what advice would you have to give to them as they're looking to cut their teeth and become the next Mark Wehner?
You know, I do talk to people, I mentor people, and I tell them, look, you have to start small. Whether you're buying a single apartment with in a syndicate, you start small, do your research, and just take it step by step. So many of these young people come, they want to put together a fund. They can buy 1 or 2 billion rands worth of property and have a fund and do this. And it's not going to work because you're not going to get that kind of money. And you need to have some kind of track record before people will trust you. So either you've got to go and work for somebody. In fact, it was quite interesting you say that, because I had a lady come and see me last week. She was one of Redefine's first interns. She then went on to work for various people. She's now taken a position with the municipality to manage the entire property portfolio and to manage it, to lease it, to do the whole thing. So she's grown through this whole thing, and now she's established her own business as a property manager. And there are so many people like that. So I think the thing is, one way or another, get your foot on the ladder, And then slowly, slowly, you're going to climb. There's no elevator to success. It's one step at a time. And you're going to climb up the stairs. You're going to fall down a few, climb back up. And that's the way you get there. It doesn't happen overnight. And property is a way to build wealth, but it's a slow accumulation. It's not like buying a share today for 10 Rand and tomorrow you hope it's going to be 20.
And I think it is a generational thing. A lot of the interns I see come through our doors here at Classic want to rise up through the ranks without perhaps doing some of the grunt work and the slog work and building their innings, to use a cricketing analogy. We really have to get back to an age of hard work and away from there's a sense of entitlement that is pervasive in the country.
And a total understanding. So we have people come, I interview them, what do you want to do? I want to be an asset manager or portfolio manager. But sorry, have you ever walked on the roof of a building? Do you know what to look for when you're looking at the waterproofing or the guttering, or have you ever done leasing? No, but they want to be an asset manager. You can't do it without the knowledge. You know, it's like saying, well, look, I'd like to be a surgeon. And I did a first aid course. It's not going to work.
Mark, in your career, you've had many highs. Personally, you've had a few lows as well. And one of them most recently was the tragic passing of your wife. Very difficult to deal with that. How are you building your life again after losing someone who's been such a key ally for so many years?
You know, we were married for 40 years and she was at my side. She worked with me at Redefine. She didn't work for Redefine, but she came into the office every day to handle our personal stuff. So it was a very close relationship and it's been very, very difficult. Fortunately, during the days, I've thrown myself into work and my days are busy. But obviously, you go home at night, you go home to an empty house. It's very lonely. It's really difficult. I'm very, very fortunate in that I have two daughters here and son-in-laws who are very, very supportive and help me and go through and take me for dinners to them. And my children in Australia are also very supportive and they phone me every day. But at the end of the day, you're still going back to an empty house and it's very lonely. And I suppose it's just an adjustment that's going to take time.
And it's certainly something that I can empathize with. My dad died last Easter, and my mom has also found it equally tough. Perhaps a little bit more time on her hands, but the evenings are the hardest. Mark, I must say, it's superb to have a business leader of your caliber staying in the country, though, and committing to mentoring young business people and showing them the ropes. We need to see more of that in South Africa. Just as we wrap this up, what is your sense of where we find ourselves? And there is so much uncertainty. Will Moody's downgrade us? What's going to happen to Eskom? What's going to happen to this fight back in the ANC? Where will we be in 10 years' time? What is your sense of where we are right now? And do you think we're going down the tubes?
You know, I am by nature an optimist. And at 70 years old, I have no intention of leaving. That's why I started all over again. Yes, on a smaller scale. I don't want as big a business as we had. So I do have confidence that things will come right. It's going to take time. I wish that the ruling party would get its act together and get things going a lot quicker, because I do believe that with a little bit of effort, we could see GDP growth at above 2%. And, you know, if they involve business more. But I think we will come right slowly, and it will be there. I think that we will see a lot of political upheaval in a sense. I think that we are heading now probably at the next elections to some kind of a coalition, which brings with it its own challenges, but its own positives as well. As far as the Moody's downgrade is concerned, it might still come. I don't think it's going to come now, because Moody's haven't got us on negative watch, and it's really unusual to see them go sort of from stable to a downgrade. And I think, I might be wrong, but I think the president a week or two ago actually alluded to the fact that South Africa's bankrupt.
Well, that's the bottom line, isn't it, Mark? There was a very good Madam and Eve cartoon talking about or drawing monopoly bailout. When does it end? When do the taxpayers have to stop bailing out these failing SOEs? And when can we rebuild that contract between the taxpayer and the government to go out and spend the money where it needs to be spent, on the schools and on the services that many...
Look, I think you know, our problems begin and end, not totally, but with our education system. If we come back to Poland, and you can talk about the communist government, but those people are so highly educated. and so knowledgeable and have a great work ethic. And that makes all the difference, because you're dealing with people who have been properly educated, who want to work, who are committed to doing what they have to do, and you see the results, GDP growth of anywhere between 4 and 5%. But also, just coming back to mentoring, you know, we did the show, the Mentorship Challenge. We've done two seasons. I'm hoping to do something next year. We have over 4,000 people registered as mentees. We've got over 300 mentors. And it's amazing to see, because the one thing I never realized until I started doing that program is that we, as it's called, the previously privileged, or white South Africans, not necessarily privileged financially, but we have a network. If you wanted to be a radio announcer or a commentator or whatever it was, a disc jockey, through your contacts or your parents' contracts or aunts and uncles, you would know somebody who would be able to give you advice. Mm. And these previously disadvantaged people, people coming out of the townships, if they're lucky, the mother's a domestic, the father's a security guard, they want to do engineering or whatever it is, and there's no one to talk to.
That is sort of the unseen capital that does lead to a privilege. I know some people say, oh, don't talk to me about white privilege and come with this woke speak. But it's true. It's there. It exists, and we have to acknowledge it.
How many of these people, against all odds, I can tell you, if it was you, me, or my kids or grandkids, we would have given up, how they've persevered and how they've become successful. Mm. It's probably one of the most rewarding things that I've done in my entire career. And when you hear those stories, it just gives you so much hope.
Well, happy to hear that there's another season of your mentorship program.
I'm not sure if it'll be a season or it'll be a podcast or how it'll be done. They're working on that at the moment, but certainly it's something that, for me, one way or another, I'm going to continue.
Well, great chatting to you, Mark. Can I say you've been a mensch for so many years and continue to be so. Thanks for sharing your view from the C-suite here on Classic Business.